Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
It was a day of politics, certainly here in Ireland, that's for sure. And in general, it is a great time for any kind of political junkie around the world because we're getting close to local elections, European elections, and of course, the presidential race in the United States. And I only heard one political correspondent last night on, I think it was GB News, and one of them saying that the presidential campaign in America has turned into a bit of a joke at this stage. You know, ideally a presidential or a campaign, election campaign, should be, you know, a burst of 6 weeks. Donald Trump has been campaigning since he left the White House. It's the longest presidential campaign probably in history. So, but it is entertaining if you're watching the whole thing. One person who shares my love of US politics is Dr. Clodagh Harrington, who works at the University College in Cork and who also hosts an excellent political podcast called A Chicken in Every Pot. I think that's a great name for a podcast, by the way. She joins me now on the line for a good yarn and a good chat about just what's going on stateside. Clodagh, hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good evening.
I have to say, I'm just, I can't watch any more of it because my mind is turning to mush watching Donald Trump up on stage, usually saying the same thing over and over again with a little bit of adage, you know, for every crowd that he visits. He's doing well, mind you, Clodagh. He is doing well. You can't deny that. And then we have, of course, Joe Biden has now put his hat in the ring officially and his State of Union address. And let's start with that first, because, of course, that was heavily anticipated that he'd forget his lines, he'd mumble his way through it, where in fact he didn't. He actually came across okay.
I think he came across very okay, actually. And I think, you know, the stakes were high. Everyone was watching. You know, if he put a foot wrong or a word wrong or looked in any way weak for a nanosecond, you know, his opponents would have been all over it. And I would say even those within his own party would have been, you know, breaking a sweat. But I thought he did really well. It was genuinely a vibrant speech. And I think the measure of it, like literally the measure of it, was that the hour after the speech was his best single hour for online fundraising since he began campaigning. So I guess he could take that as a win.
I mean, it's always an easier task for the incumbent. And I remember I spoke to a political campaigner or an expert on political campaigns there a while ago. And he described the American politics when you're already the president, the person who wants to take the seat off you, i.e. Donald Trump, it's almost like a referendum because the incumbent obviously has the advantage to some degree. So do you think that Joe Biden has the advantage even though Trump is polling higher at the moment?
Well, somebody said an interesting thing yesterday to me, actually, and said this is a very unusual situation because arguably there are two incumbents in the race. And it's like, you know, yes, one is the existing, the technically the incumbent, but, you know, Trump is the very recent version of. And so it's an unusual situation.
Has that happened before in American history? It has it?
Well, the last time I think anybody got back in, you know, in a non-sequential race was Grover Cleveland, and that's a very, very, very long time ago. So this is a strange setup. But you're absolutely right. Trump is polling quite consistently. I would say his approval doesn't tend to fluctuate particularly. The people that love him, they just continue to love him, and I don't think they're going to stop. But he struggles to get more people to love him. I think that's probably
He is like Marmite, isn't he? You know what I mean? You either love it or you hate it. You either love it or hate it.
Absolutely.
Whereas Biden can grab the people sitting on the fence, although it does look like Trump is doing well in the swing states, which is probably a little bit less usual. Biden or the Democrats tend to grab those people who are undecided at the last minute. But on this occasion, it does seem like Trump seems to be doing okay in those swing states that normally might go to the Democrats.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, there's a few things. I mean, the kind of overall polling seems to have Trump at about 42% or 42.5% or something at the moment of favorable. So, you know, that's quite solid, let's put it that way. The other thing that I think would be interesting to see how in the coming months, he has to, at the moment, he's in recent weeks, he's been singing to his people. You know, he's on the stump. He's saying the things that the MAGA people love. You know, he's with his crowd. But as the months go on, he is going to have to be mindful, and his own campaign people are extremely mindful, that he has to speak a little bit beyond the base, as in two those beyond the base, because there are what I would call kind of traditional Republicans or maybe small-C conservative Republicans who, you know, are party loyalists. They're not going to vote for Biden, but they would be concerned about the Trumpian aspect of, you know, that sort of unique set of character traits that he has and the unique way that he has governed in the past. And there would be, yeah, nervous Republicans.
Why,
so he's got to get some of them or he won't win.
Why do you think at the moment Biden seems to be losing some of the black votes? And unusually, Donald Trump seems to be gaining a lot of the young black votes in America. And that was pointed out last night. Now, maybe it's because black people feel a little bit disenfranchised and maybe he's talking the talk. I don't know. But you would imagine because of his anti-immigration policy and the way, I suppose, he goes on about immigration. Although, you know, Biden being the other extreme, the kind of free-for-all as well. There has to be a measure in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, but I think...
You would imagine the black people or the young vote wouldn't like him.
Swing amongst younger black men.
Mm-hmm.
And... it's not something I would have anticipated, but there's probably, I don't know that there's one particular reason for it. I would say in part, at least perhaps, is there are some younger black American men who kind of, this goes back to, you know, when Trump was on TV for that program, The Apprentice, I don't know if you
yes,
remember.
Yes, I do remember it, yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, he sat in the chair and he looked presidential and there was a lot of talk, in 2016 that TV program was actually lining him up for his presidential run because he appeared presidential in a sort of televised setting and people loved it. And he polled, in that TV program, he polled particularly well with African-Americans and young African-American men in particular. Now, those men would be older. Here we are in 2024. But just that kind of aspirational, you can do well. This is America. Anything is possible. You know, for a demographic that half a century ago, that narrative was absolutely not relevant at all, you know, kind of pre-civil rights or whatever. But these days, it is much more so with all the caveats of America still being a racist country, etc. So I can understand it to an extent, but I don't know that in terms of kind of policy or legacy so far, I don't know that Trump has done anything particularly useful or durable for black America. So I'm surprised, but not sure we'll make too much difference numbers-wise in the end.
Getting back to the kind of State of the Union address, the tactic and strategy from Joe Biden's camp seems to be very different to Donald Trump, who doesn't mind taking a swipe at Joe Biden. Sleepy Joe, as he calls him on a regular basis, or he was having a go at him last night sitting on beaches, right? But 13 times during the State of the Union address, he referred to my predecessor. He never calls him by his name. He always refers to him as my predecessor. He talked about Russia. He talked about NATO. He had a go at him over defense spending, many different things. Why do you think he doesn't, his strategy doesn't seem to be to have a go at Donald Trump?
I would say it's twofold. One is, you know that kind of Thatcherite line about not giving the oxygen of publicity. I think that would be one thing. Why would you promote the name of your opponent in an environment where it's supposed to be all about you and your campaign and your party? So that would be like the first aspect of it. And the other, I think, is it's not Biden-esque to do that sort of negative campaigning, that slagging off your opponent, that, you know, making yourself look good by making the other person look bad. It's hardly particular to Trump, but, you know, there's a certain kind of politician that does that. And I don't think Biden is one of those people. He is, you know, he presents that, and I think he authentically is, you know, your very decent, olden days, almost quaint in some ways, politician who doesn't go for the jugular because he's platforming on positives. And I actually have great admiration for that, I think, in an era.
Would you say you're a bit of a Biden fan?
Well,
I mean, there was nothing really in the State of the Union address, really. Well, apart from the Roe v. Wade, which obviously is a bit of a risky one because it divides people down the centre in America, right? So, but he's going to reverse the Roe v. Wade. He also talked about immigration. He also talked about taxes and putting dollars back in people's pockets, which, look, every politician says that. He also talked about healthcare. You know, that was a famous Obama one, you know, the Obamacare, bringing that back and bringing back healthcare for people and reducing the amount of money they have to spend on medication, et cetera, et cetera. There was nothing, you know, major in it, really, was there?
I suppose what I took from it was, you know, it was the mandate for term two, if You know, that this was his platform to do so. So he didn't necessarily blow the doors off, but he kind of gave out a shopping list of what his priorities are going to be. And I suppose, you know, a reasonably pragmatic, sane voter would want to hear that kind of stuff. Whether they're going to choose to vote for him or not is another story. But that they just get the kind of the hyperbole-free, here are my priorities, here's what I've done so far, here's what's coming down the line. So no, it wasn't an astonishing speech by any measure, but it was solid. And I think his delivery, I mean, this is, I think, a good example of where the style was considered to be as important as the substance because of his age and because everyone's just waiting for him to fall, you know, metaphorically or actually. His capacity to deliver was a very important element of it. And I think he did deliver on that. One thing I think is interesting is that, you know, foreign policy is such a huge issue at the moment, and no one ever won an election on foreign policy because it's not what the public tend to care about unless they're literally in the middle of a war. And the way that he framed foreign policy was he talked about, and he has talked about, you know, in recent months or since the Ukraine war, really talking about foreign policy for the middle classes. And in doing so, he's trying to kind of frame it so that it matters to the folks at home because it's about their security and their prosperity. And I think that's quite interesting because I can't think of another president who's done that. So he's trying to kind of marry those two things together and make it relevant to people when he's, you know, in Congress or dealing with Congress, trying to get them to sign off on another massive Ukraine spending bill or whatever. So I thought that.
Or NATO, of course. NATO is a big thing. He's having a go at Donald Trump over NATO. But was Trump wrong when it came to NATO? Remembering, of course, that America pays about 70% of the bill. Was he wrong to turn around and say, well, look, if you're not going to pay, we're not going to protect you? I mean, was he wrong to say
that? I think
from what I believe, billions of dollars come in the next day. But was he wrong to say that?
I think there is a very valid argument to be had about, you know, who pays how much into the NATO pot. And Trump certainly wasn't the first to go there. I mean, going back to Obama days, he used to be very frustrated with, you know, others not paying their way, basically. But I think there is a way to do it. And to be so kind of reckless and irresponsible as to say the things that he said recently about, you know, not caring what happened to other NATO members. I mean, the premise of NATO is kind of, I always think of it like, you know, the three musketeers, you know, it's one for all and all for one. And if you're not signing up for that, money aside, then that is really quite problematic because the strength of NATO is in the kind of collective investment, not just economically, but in every sense. And to unpick that, to me, is dangerous, especially at a time when the world is quivering with danger. I don't think it was wise or impressive or useful.
One thing that was noted, by the way, at the start of the State of the Union address was, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who managed to sneak her way in. And she had her badge on her, say her name, and talking about, of course, Lake and Riley. And, of course, I think Joe just ignored her, moved on swiftly, so to speak.
Yeah, well, she does love the limelight.
She does.
She knows how to grab it, you know, visually. And I mean, she's a maestro of that. Is it appropriate or statesperson like? No, I don't think so.
I don't know how she got in, by the way. She had her MAGA hat on her, for God's sake. I don't know if she was wearing that walking in the door or not, but I don't know how she managed to get in there. The big question in America, of course, is immigration. Like the big question everywhere in the world when it comes to Europe and everything, and it seems to be swinging countries politically at the moment, which is immigration. You've got two polar opposites in Biden and Trump when it comes to immigration. Biden accused more recently of flying people in private jets or planes or chartered planes from Mexico, where you've got Trump turning around and says if he gets in, he's going to have the biggest mass deportation the world has ever seen. So, I mean, where do Americans, do you think, stand on that issue?
Well, I think it's a huge voter concern now for a whole range of people. You know, you don't have to be a Trump supporter or any kind of racist or anything to acknowledge that the immigration situation is very challenging. I think the term that the border control people use is encounters at the border, and currently encounters are at a record high. I think probably what's most frustrating, and probably for Biden himself and for anybody who really would like this to be fixed in a constructive and useful manner, is that, you know, there was a bipartisan piece of legislation that got as far as the Senate, and it would have been a really, really useful thing. But unfortunately, it was derailed by Republicans who didn't want a Biden win and didn't want a bipartisan win because it didn't suit their political agenda. So I think that's very frustrating. There's been, I don't know, well over 6 million encounters, as they're called, at the border on Biden's watch. You know, it's really a lot. He's done a lot of things. I know he's signed like probably more than 500 executive actions on immigration. Now, that's not the same as legislation. That's him just trying to move things on in the face of, you know, partisan opposition. But I think it was deeply unfortunate that there was a moment there for some kind of bipartisan progress, and it got stymied for political point scoring rather than for, you know, putting country over party.
Yeah.
But it's a major issue for sure.
And the other thing people seem to have forgotten about him, although he made a big entrance going back about 6 months ago, of course, Robert Kennedy Jr. I mean, he's still in there. He's still hanging in there. But he seems to have lost his, I'm not going to say lost his mojo, but he seems to have, at one stage, you know, a lot of people were talking about him. You know, he was getting a lot of interviews. We seen him a lot on TV. And all of a sudden, it's kind of vanished, but he's still there. And he's still taking up a percentage there, by the way. Does he have is there any possibility at all that this guy, well, he might be around for the next presidential election, maybe?
I suppose it's possible. I think, what is he? Is he 70 or thereabouts, I think? Yeah,
he doesn't,
I mean,
he doesn't look it, mind you, does he? He's a healthy looking man for his age.
Well, I mean, by the rate of others, that's quite youthful, you know? It's like.
Well, that's another thing, by the way. This rematch at the moment, they're two of the oldest presidents ever to run in America.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, the Robert Kennedy Jr., I mean, you know, the way that it's worked out, everybody says that they don't want a Trump-Biden rematch, and yet somehow that's where it's ended up. So the kind of the alternatives are very attractive. You have, you know, I mean, the Kennedy brand is you know, kind of a priceless thing in many ways. But I think the general consensus amongst pundits and people that I spoke to is that, you know, this particular brand of Kennedy is not desperately what most people want, you know. He has kind of niche appeal, I suppose, but really, I don't think he is a particularly serious contender, and I don't think his bid is going to go anywhere, you know, particularly meaningful, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I like him. I do like him. Some of the stuff he says I don't agree with, but I think he's a good talker, and I think he goes very deep into stuff. I mean, I listened to him on Joe Rogan and a few other things, and he's a very deep conversationalist, and he's a very intelligent man. Or doubt about that. I just don't agree with some of the stuff that he says. But I mean, maybe next time round, I think. Maybe would that be the case? Maybe next time round?
Possibly. I mean, he does have a kind of a substantial fan base, again, and they are people that would be kind of, you know, quite loyal to him. So that loyalty tends to be quite kind of personal and a bit tribal. So people could stay with him, certainly. I mean, he alienated a lot of people, you know, way back with the whole vaccine situation, you know, not to fall down that rabbit hole, but that left its mark, I think, with a lot of people. So I don't know how you kind of come back from that. You know, if you're the anti-science guy, you're going to attract a certain kind of set of supporters, and you're going to alienate a lot of others. So I don't know how he might fix that. But then, you know, people have short memories, they can forget. So who knows, for 2028, it might be a relatively youthful 74-year-old Kennedy, you know, name on the ballot. It's not impossible.
Vice presidents, of course. Donald Trump still hasn't announced who the vice president will be, if indeed he gets elected. Vivek Bashami seems to have, he's gone. He's out of the race. He's more or less said that he's not going to be the one. There's been loads of rumours circulating. Even Tucker Carlson's name was mentioned at one stage. So, I mean, have we any idea, or who's your money on at this stage?
Well, I did an event yesterday, and we had a guest speaker over from the States, and his kind of 2 cents worth was probably Tim Scott. He reckons that he, you know, if you know, he doesn't have huge name recognition over here, but he's a senator from South Carolina. He's African American, so, you know, that would be prudent in many ways. He's he's a very loyal Trump ally. I think he had his own presidential bid very, very briefly You know, before Christmas, it didn't get
to go. He only got a very small percentage of the vote. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But he's only like in his 50s. So again, he's a good kind of antidote to Trump in terms of, I mean, yes, they're both men, but he's
and he's a bit he's a businessman as well. So Trump would like him, I suppose, too.
Yes, yes, indeed. And I mean, you have to kind of be pragmatic as well. I mean, if you're a voter, right, and think, okay, Trump is, I don't know, he doesn't strike me as someone that maybe goes to the gym every day. You know, he's not, well, he doesn't seem to have, doesn't get the same, you know, stick as Biden does about his advancing years and all the rest of it. But chances are, you know, if he wins, something could, he could have a major health issue very feasibly.
Yeah.
You know, that makes him incapacitated. So again, a bit like with Biden, you know, the choice of vice president is perhaps more consequential and noteworthy than, you know, someone like Obama, for example, who was kind of young, fit and healthy. And, you know, everyone kind of thought he was going to see his terms through. So, yeah, Tim Scott would be one of them. I mean, there are others as well. There are some female governors who, on a couple of congresswomen, there's a New York congresswoman, Stefanik.
Okay.
It's her surname, and I think she's been a very loyal Trump ally. She's kind of a rising star in the Republican Party. She would be the House of Representatives' highest-ranking female politician, I think. So again, you know, she's young, she's telegenic, she's full of energy. She kind of sings the Trump song. So, you know, her as well, possibly. There are others. Sarah Huckabee Sanders gets mentioned in special.
We have to mention Kamala Harris, of course. You know, I mean, she seems, maybe this is just me being biased, but she seems a bit unhinged. You know, I don't think a huge amount of people have a lot of faith in her. She didn't do very much for the last, you know, 3.5 years. And we haven't seen very much of her. And what we did see really wasn't very good. She hasn't played a big role.
No, she hasn't. I mean, I kind of feel she got a bit shortchanged early on, really. I mean, maybe things are changing now on that front for a few reasons. But, like, when they first were, you know, when she first joined the ticket, you know, it was all about the Biden-Harris ticket, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that always happens, you know, when the vice president first comes along. They always make out like it's going to be a proper team and equality all the way and whatever, and then they get in and the vice president kind of gets, you know, sent out to buy paper clips or whatever. And I think she got a bit of a bum deal. You know, she was tasked with the aspect of immigration that involved trying to, you know, fix parts of Central America that are still, you know, a major challenge that no sort of individual has a magic wand for. So she kind of got embroiled in that. And certainly, as you say, she didn't seem to be particularly visible or present. The other thing is that a lot of the mainstream media didn't sort of
take to her. Yeah, no, they didn't take to her.
Yeah, and I think that was quite unfortunate because I don't think
the times that we have seen her, now mind you, there are memes and stuff going around of her on Twitter. The times that we did see of her, I mean, her behavior is quite unusual, you know, up on the pulpit, so to speak. It does seem quite erratic. And now maybe they're just the ones they're kind of focusing on, the ones that we get to see on social media, but the ones I've seen seem
quite
erratic.
That's the thing, isn't it? You know, things
sound
get
bites.
Snipped and tucked and you don't necessarily know like what the kind of the bigger picture is. She's a very intelligent, accomplished, educated, you know, individual who has a fabulous resume. I think sometimes that she, like her kind of career background as, you know, a district attorney and all that kind of stuff, like she's more lawyerly in her focus than... Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a politician's head is a bit of a different thing. And sometimes it's like she has presented to me as maybe a little bit adversarial or whatever, because that was her job previously. And she didn't quite get the memo about transitioning to, you know, a less adversarial way of interacting. So that was maybe a bit of an early days learning curve. I do know now that, you know, as the election, you know, looms into the kind of the, you know, the mid-range anyway, that she is being dispatched out to talk about things like reproductive rights and stuff that it makes sense to have a woman's voice
Yeah, I imagine.
So I think she will be more visible and more utilised, and hopefully more held in better esteem.
Well, the thing about it is, if Joe Biden does get re-elected and she's vice president, she most likely will have to take over from at some point, because I don't see him lasting a term of 4 years.
So I think
she's more important this time than she was last time, is the point I'm trying to make.
I totally agree. Now, I mean, the upside of that is, you know, yes, perhaps it's more likely to be President Harris, but she also will have, you know, more experience if she's had her first term as a vice president, and let's say she gets through that unscathed, unless there's some kind of unforeseen thing that we can't anticipate right now. But otherwise, you know, she will be going into term two with, you know, a substantial amount of experience under her belt, and that's got to count for something. And hopefully to be taken more seriously as a potential president by the administration. Because, you know, like back in the day, the vice president was, I mean, what was the thing, you know, that they, George Bush Senior said he used to just sit in the office, you fly, I die. No, you die, I fly. You know, just waiting for dignitaries in other countries to die, that kind of thing. Like, she and her recent predecessors are far more than that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I still think she hasn't quite gotten the kind of the attention and platform that she may have deserved.
Right, let's get to predictions, Clodagh, and let's get real here, okay? So, I'm going into Paddy Power's tomorrow, and I'm going to put a bet on the presidential election. What's your tip? What do you say is going to happen? Are you going to nail your colours to the mast?
I need to try and kind of separate out what I want to happen.
Yeah, separate what you want. I know what you want to happen. Right? You don't have to tell me that, Clodagh.
I don't think Donald Trump is a safe pair of hands. You know, I genuinely don't. I think probably, I've been wrong before, but if the polls were, you know, next week or whatever, I think Biden would just about scrape it, and only just about. I think it would be extremely tight. And the thing that would worry me, and does worry me, is, and it's not that I'm, you know, the world's biggest Biden fan, it's just that I don't want it to be Donald Trump, because I think he is a danger to democracy, and I really truly believe that. The left of the Democrat Party, to me, is where the problem is, because a lot of those youth voters and a lot of those left-wing Democrats would be inclined to stay home on election day because they're cross with Biden about Gaza and about whatever other stuff that, you know, he hasn't done enough or well enough or left enough or whatever. So if those people don't come out, then
He hasn't done well enough on a lot of things, in fairness, Clodagh. Now, I'm not having a go at the Democrats. And by the way, you probably gather from me, I'm a conservative. So obviously, I would be more in Trump's camp. But I am a realist as well. And I do believe, I think you're right. I think it'll be extremely close. But I would hedge my bets, leaving aside my personal preference, I would hedge my bets on probably Donald Trump getting it. But I know there's a lot of people worried about that. I understand that. But I, as much as I think Trump is erratic, I think he says a lot of stuff that he shouldn't say, I do believe that for the American economy, he was better. If it hadn't have been for COVID, I think COVID upset his presidency quite a lot, because obviously that took 2 years out of his presidency. I think if it hadn't have been for COVID, I think he would have done a lot better for the economy. Some of the conservative stuff that maybe people who are on the left wouldn't agree with, the Roe v. Wade, for example, or his views on transgenderism, his views on immigration for a lot of people are a little bit to the extreme. And I get that. I understand that and I appreciate and I respect other people's views on that. But in saying that, I don't know if Joe Biden is a safe pair of hands. I really don't. Look at the state of America at the moment. You can't deny it's in a bad place. Can it be worse?
Yeah, it has a lot of really, really substantial problems. I think the thing with the economy is, I heard a good phrase yesterday, because we were talking about Bidenomics and how that the term has got a bit of a branding issue, and I heard the term perceptionomics, and it kind of made me laugh. But like, what it kind of pertains to is the economy is actually doing really quite well at the moment, really quite well, broadly speaking. Maybe not for, you know, every individual, but when you look at the figures, it is really quite strong. But the message isn't getting out to people, And I think, you know, if it still is the economy stupid, and I don't quite know if it totally is anymore, as in the priority for people voting, I think it's gotten a little bit more complex these days. But in the end, you know, if you are doing okay in your life in terms of the money that's coming in every week, month, whatever, and, you know, your mortgage and that kind of stuff, if those things are okay for you, you're probably going to be a bit more satisfied with the incumbent. And I think there is a disconnect between Biden's economic achievements and how the general public feels about the economy.
See,
I think that's very unfortunate.
I hosted a show a couple of times in Florida on a radio station called WTKS. Now, I know, of course, it's a Republican county. And I hosted a show there similar to this where people would call into the show. And it was just after Trump had got into power. It was about a year after he got into power. And what they said about Donald Trump when callers were calling in was they had more money in their pockets. And that's all they cared about. They had more money in their pockets.
Okay.
And I suppose for the American people, they care about their safety and they care about money in their pockets. And I suppose it's the same worldwide. That's what people want, isn't it? They want to feel safe and they want money in their pockets.
Yeah.
And I think Trump sometimes gives them that. Now, he gives them a lot of the other stuff they might want as well. But I think he gives them that. Now, maybe, you know, and again, I respect your views and I know you respect mine. But I just think he will get it. I think he will get it. I think he's in better health. I know they're two elderly men. Only 3 years between them. But I think people visibly will realise he's in better health. He seems to be sharper than Joe Biden. Although I'm not going to criticise Joe Biden's State of the Union address. I think he looked sharp then and I think he came across well. But I do believe overall, I think Donald Trump is coming across sharper, more together. It will be interesting, and I'll make my decision when I see a debate between the two of them. Do you think that'll happen?
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, Trump wants it to happen, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure Biden wants it to happen.
I suppose. I think you know what my gut response is that if there was one, I wouldn't be able to watch it. I would find it too stressful.
I would find it entertaining.
I find that kind of adversarial interaction very difficult to watch. And because I have a respect and a warmth maybe for Biden as a human. I mean, not just maybe about his politics or whatever,
but I get that.
You know, anyone who's been in public life for half a century, and he is a decent human being. I think, you know, you can disagree with his policies or not. I think he is genuinely coming from a kind of
I wouldn't make it personal. Yeah.
You know, no. Of course, I know. Yeah, absolutely. But I would find that to be a difficult interaction. I think these days in the era of kind of spectacle where everybody wants that kind of gladiatorial interaction, I think maybe it might be a necessity. They might have to go there and do it. But I think I'd be hiding behind the couch when that happens.
With the popcorn in one hand.
Out, yeah.
Well, listen, when it does happen, we'll get you back on again and we'll go through it step by step. How about that? Clodagh, it's been lovely talking to you. Please. And may the best man win, as they say, or woman, if this case may
indeed, be. Indeed. As long as the elections are free and fair, I'll be happy with that.
Dr. Clodagh Harrington, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much.
And I appreciate you coming on talking.
Good night.
Thanks.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.